Hello and happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We are going to talk about Irish music and Irish song, the country itself, the many, many beauties of Ireland, and why it is that there are so many Irish people who are writers, who are poets, who play music so beautifully, who are politicians, who are, there are a lot of talk show hosts, I think, who are Irish as well. And I know that many of you listening have been to Ireland and have special places that you would like to tell us about. We just thought, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day. Let's listen to some music and hear some poetry and talk about Ireland. And our guest this hour is James Bainbridge. He is a travel writer who has worked on Lonely Planet projects ranging from Africa and India guides to a blog series about Burning Man Festival. He started out as a features editor in London and in Sydney, and he's written for publications such as The Guardian, The Australian, and Songlines World Music Magazine. He is co-author of the book that's just out in a lovely book it is, The Ireland Travel Guide 2008, which has been published by Lonely Planet. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Or if you'd like to send a St. Patrick's Day email, you can do that. That's talk@wpr.org. And I believe James is he in London today? Are you in London, James?
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, thanks very much for being with us. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Yeah. It must have been a lovely book to put together. I've been to Ireland several times, and it's such a beautiful country, to say nothing of how friendly and hospitable everybody is and all the poetry and the music and everything. It's just a pretty place to be.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a lyrical, eccentric island, and all of the sort of cliches and preconceptions are actually true. and you will meet friendly madmen in the pubs, and there are beautiful mountain ranges and beautiful stretches of wild coastline, and everything you hear is true. And indeed, there have been, on the more negative side, there has been a recent troubled political past, but that seems to be on the mend now. So basically, it is a really amazing destination to go to.
Are there more people now, because some of the troubles seem to be behind the country, are more people traveling in the north of Ireland now, James?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and in fact, Belfast is really it's really sort of looking to start showcasing its merits as a tourist destination alongside the more southern parts of Ireland soon. In fact, 2012 is the year that they've chosen to really go big and expose themselves to the rest of the world, because that's the 100th anniversary of the maiden voyage of the RMS Titanic, which you may have heard of.
Yes.
Which is, and obviously what the locals in Belfast remind you is that she was fine when she left here.
Right.
which is a classic example of an Irish thing to say, really.
Right, it sure is.
Yeah, so yeah, indeed, the north of the country is on the up, and obviously the south of the country needs no encouragement as a tourist destination. It's very popular already.
Yeah. Are there still, or has it become such a popular travel destination, are there still places where you can go and it's wild, and there are still, you know, sheep and goats in the roads, and people will take you in and offer you a cup of coffee, or are those days gone because it is so popular?
Yeah, no, I mean, those days are still alive and well. I mean, for instance, I researched the sort of southern end of the country. So I researched counties Waterford, Wexford, and Kerry. And Kerry is obviously very well known for the Ring of Kerry, the drive around one of the peninsulas there, and also for the Killarney National Park with the McGillicuddy's Reeks mountain range. And, you know, that's a very rural area where, you know, you still do get trad sessions breaking out every night in remote country pubs, and yeah, you get sort of livestock wandering around all over the road. And in fact, an interesting illustration of how there is livestock everywhere is on the Bearer Peninsula, which is in kind of on the border of County Cork and County Kerry, way down in the southwest corner of the country. Right at the end, there's this island called Dursey Island, and there's this, the only way to get to this island is by cable car, and livestock and animals take preference over humans in the cable car.
That's a great story. Can you put Ireland in time and place for us? We think of it as, and rightfully so, as a country that has so many poets, that has so many playwrights and lovely music and thousands of very skilled musicians. What were the origins of that tradition, James?
Well, I mean, I think it's very much the sort of passionate Celtic mentality, which is and also the fact that it has been a largely sort of rural place for many centuries, really up until perhaps only the last 15 to 20 years. So I think, you know, it's to do with communal social bonding, you know, sort of sitting around in the villages and music being a good way for everyone to gather together and come and tell stories. And also, as I say, the kind of Celtic nature, which has also been very much about songwriting and art and poetry. And I mean, you find that very much in the other Celtic parts of this corner of the world, such as Cornwall in England and Wales and Scotland.
Yes. The day in Ireland would be celebrated. Today is a holiday in Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It is. And in fact, I was in Ireland this time last year researching the guide that's just come out. And I was in Kerry. I was in a town in the north of County Kerry called Listowel. And there was a little parade, and most sort of provincial towns and cities in Ireland will have a parade, and they're actually very funny because they all have these classic elements that you've got to find in every self-respecting St. Patrick's Day parade, and one would be the local school kids kind of badly dressed up as leprechauns, and the other would be tractors and combine harvesters. And the other one would be local businesses shamelessly using the occasion to advertise themselves. I had a pretty amusing time because Listowel is meant to be a sort of literary town because there was a very well-known Irish poet and playwright called John B. Keane, who used to run a pub there, and the pub, as is common in Ireland, is named after him. Pubs are often named after the landlord in Ireland. So, and he's dead now, but it still carries his name. So, in the John B. Keane pub, I was standing there and I was sort of taking a few notes because there were people coming up to the bar and just singing for their pint, which was an amazing sort of lyrical, musical thing to see, really. And I was kind of noting, trying to discreetly note a few of these sights down. And the landlord clocked what I was doing, and he said, we've had enough of you writers down here, now put that notebook away and have a drink.
And so, of course, you did.
yeah, gladly. I took his advice. It was amusing because, there must have been about five or six Lonely Planet authors working on the Island Guide, and we were all on the road researching at the same time. So we all wrote blogs for the website. We all did a St. Patrick's Day blog, and I talked about my experiences in Listowel. And, there was someone else who was in Dublin because the sort of senior coordinating author on the guide is actually an Irish fella who lives in Dublin. And, he actually had a sort of slightly existential moment because, you know, the parade in Dublin now, I mean, it's so multicultural. You know, you've got Sikh floats and Polish floats and all these different floats representing Dublin's many different communities. And he was saying, what's become of St. Patrick's? Is this really relevant to what it used to be? And of course, it's such a tourist attraction. So, you know, he was being a bit cynical about it. But of course, I suppose he was allowed to be because he is Irish.
Right.
And then there was someone else who was in Limerick, which is also on the west, sort of towards the west coast, quite close to where I was in Kerry. And, he was observing the same things as I was about the parade, basically, about how you had to have local school kids dressed as leprechauns and tractors and combine harvesters.
I was there in 89 doing a broadcast from Dublin, and I was. It seemed like everybody in the parade at that time was from America. You know, they were all from Dallas, Dallas, Texas. They were all over the place, and all the politicians were in America.
Which politician? Sorry, you mean the Irish politicians?
The Irish politicians come here, it seems, for St. Patrick's Day to celebrate the New York parade and the Chicago parade, et cetera. It's a way for them to, I'm sure, increase tourism and goodwill for their land.
Well, I was in Vancouver, you know, in Western Canada once for St. Patrick's, and it's funny because, I think it's almost a bigger deal in sort of North America and, you know, Australia and places where a lot of Irish people have emigrated to, because you get all things like pints of lager with green food dye in them,
right.
And, you know, all these kind of things. So, I mean, I think in places with large communities of people, you know, who are originally descended from Irish immigrants, you do get... You do get a lot of celebrations because it's a good way for people to sort of get back in touch with their roots. So I've almost seen as many mad sort of sessions in the pub and parades and things in places like Sydney and Vancouver as I have in Dublin and Kerry. And in fact, I believe the parade in New York is the biggest in the world, isn't it?
Yes, I believe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about food for a moment, James, because the Irish have had, and I think that it's changed substantially, a reputation for really bad food. Everything's boiled and they just don't eat very well. I haven't been there since 89, but I understand that that's changed quite dramatically.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, although having said that, if you're staying in a bed and breakfast somewhere in rural Ireland, you can still get a pretty... cholesterol heavy cooked breakfast if you're willing to take it on, and they have all these sort of disgusting things like black pudding and white pudding, and of course you can try and avoid it and sort of claim that you're vegetarian or something, but they'll say, you know, the lady who's running the bed and breakfast will be very offended, and she'll say, what's wrong with you, why don't you want my cooked breakfast? It's like, you know that character in Father Ted, you know, the lady who's always making the tea, and she goes, go on, go on, go on. But having said that, it has really increased its reputation as a kind of culinary destination. Obviously, it's right in the Atlantic, so there's some great seafood restaurants on the coast, and it's well known for other produce like Wexford strawberries, and I had some great meals when I was there. And in fact, one of the people who I interviewed for the book was a guy whose name I shall have to find because I have the book in front of me. But he's a sort of celebrity chef. I mean, he was very much like Ireland's Jamie Oliver. Do you know Jamie Oliver, this English chef, the naked chef? And anyway, he was very much the young kind of bright up-and-coming celebrity chef in Ireland. And, he ran this hotel and restaurant down in County Wexford. And he was actually, you mentioned earlier about, Irish people all heading over to America for St. Patrick's. And he himself was off to do a whole load of cookery programs in America for St. Patrick's. So.
You mentioned bed and breakfast. Are they still flourishing in Ireland, James?
What's that? Cook breakfast?
Bed and breakfast. The bed and breakfast.
Oh, bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. They are. In fact, one recommendation I would give to budget travelers, because obviously, you know, when I'm researching these books, I'm doing it on quite a tight budget, and obviously Lonely Planet writers are meant to sort of reflect, you know, the experience of the budget traveler and research that, as well as researching the requirements of more mid-range and top-end travelers. So one thing I would say is there aren't actually many youth hostels or sort of cheap hotels around when you're in the rural areas, so you will actually find yourself staying in B&Bs quite a lot. And, and they obviously range from really nice places where you can get sort of smoked salmon for breakfast, real nice sort of country house type establishments, or farm house type establishments, all the way through to really eccentric sort of Father Ted places that you know you'll be driving away from at high speed at the end of it.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you, James, and we'll take them in a moment. James Bainbridge is our guest this St. Patrick's Day. He's a travel writer, and the latest book just out, The Lonely Planet series, is on Ireland, and it looks at Northern Ireland, and it looks at the Republic of Ireland, the food, the music, the special historical places to go, the natural sites. It looks at all of the counties in the north and in the south, and we welcome your phone calls. If you're planning an excursion or if you've been to this country, or if you'd like to send your St. Patrick's Day greetings, we're celebrating the day this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. And you can send an email if you'd like. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Irish Rovers, and if you're Irish. James Bainbridge, travel writer, is our guest. He works on Lonely Planet projects, and one on Ireland has just been released just in time for St. Patrick's Day. We're welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. Diane from La Crosse is our first caller this hour. James, hi, Diane.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you that about my first trip to Ireland was a pony trek.
Ooh.
From the tip of the Connemara Peninsula to Galway. And we flew into Galway and met our guide, and we met 10 other people from all over the world.
Huh.
And he loaded us into a Land Rover and took us to the tip of the Connemara Peninsula and told us to catch your ponies. And they were just running wild in a field, bordered by the ocean and bordered by a rock wall. And we went out and grabbed our ponies, and they were our best buddies for a week.
Oh, my.
And we spent 4 to 5 hours a day riding, and we came down the western coast of the Connemara Peninsula on the beach.
Mm.
And one day, he told us to just strip our ponies, and we took the saddles off and stripped ourselves, and we rode our ponies into the ocean. And they swam with us in the cold, cold ocean.
Huh.
And then we crossed the 12 Ben Mountains, and we met people who lived in little stone cottages, and they invited us into their cottages. And no electricity. They were cooking over open fires. Wonderful people. One day we rode through a forest preserve as we were crossing the mountains, and the man who opened the gate for us held up a jug of poteen, and we all got a good gulp.
Oh,
of
my, Diane.
On horseback. And it was just a wonderful trip. It rained probably 4 hours out of the 5 hours that we were riding. And we stayed in little stone cottages at night with peat fires and just had a wonderful time. We just met some absolutely wonderful people who had us into their cottages for lunch, and, you know, it was just a great trip.
What an unusual trip, isn't it, James?
Yeah, that sounds really incredible.
Right.
And, that does illustrate a few interesting things about Ireland. One is that it rains a lot. And the other would be just all the activities you can do there, because, there's a lot of pony trekking. And there's, climbing and kite surfing, sea kayaking, and it's on the, it's on the Gulf Stream. So that makes the water a bit warmer. So you've got scuba diving and, and the surfing even. It's actually well known for its surfing beaches on the sort of southern coast. And there's mountain biking. So it is actually, it's not the kind of country where you do have to just go and sit in the pub drinking Guinness and putting on weight, there are a lot of really amazing experiences you can have out in the landscape.
I wonder if they still do pony journeys like that. That was one incredible travel experience, wasn't it, James?
Yeah. I mean, and I found that really amazing that that there were sort of people living up there in the mountains who didn't have electricity, and they were sort of just making their food over open fires. I mean, that's just because I didn't catch how long ago that was.
When were you there, Diane?
That was 1990, and there still are pony treks available if you go under Hoofbeats International on the computer.
Oh, okay.
You can get a catalog of pony treks throughout the whole world.
Huh.
But that was in 1990, and we met other people who were living in stone huts along the ocean who caught fish in nets.
Hmm.
And talk to them. They were all so friendly. They loved the horses, so they would run up to you and want to ask you questions about where you were from and the horses and the ponies.
What a trip. Thanks, Diane, so much for the call. Jim from Blue River. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Hello.
I'm happy you're back. It's good to hear you.
Thank you.
I was interested in a historical aspect of Ireland. It's a little bit of a diversion from your discussion right now, but when the Roman Empire was fallen by the Huns, they described or they destroyed and sacked most of the religious items in Italy, and the clergy, with what they could leave with, left France and Germany and went up into Ireland and actually converted the people up there, and the scribes in Ireland copied over the material, and actually after the Europe settled, it was the Irish monks that went back into Europe and recreated Christianity in the middle of Europe. And this is not very much, very well known to many people, but because it happened during the Middle Ages, if anyone's interested in it, there's a book on it, how the Irish saved
civilization. Right.
By Thomas Cahill.
Yeah, Thomas Cahill, who wrote a whole series of books.
I just thought I might put another feather in the hat of the Irish.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the call. You want to respond, James?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a very very detailed historical point that I can't respond to specifically. But I will say in general terms that, it's an amazing country for history buffs because, you've got ruins and relics everywhere, sticking up from between the hills, and it's very romantic in that sense. I mean, one aspect of obscure history that I got interested in on the sort of southeast coast of Ireland was there's this peninsula called the Hook Peninsula, which is in County Wexford, quite close to where that you can get the ferry across from England and Wales, and the Knights Templar are supposed to have been active in that region, and there are actually the ruins of churches and buildings that were built by the Knights Templar, and some of them you can even see the Knights Templar symbol hanging around, and you even get apparently a sort of Holy Grail hunters who turn up there looking for the Holy Grail, because obviously that's been a bit of a craze since the Da Vinci Code film and novel came out, the Dan Brown novel. I found that amazing that you could go on these kind of little sort of Indiana Jones-style historical quests in Ireland.
Yes. Terry from Oconomowoc, hi.
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 How are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm great.
Good.
We just got back from Ireland. We were there from New Year's Eve Day to January 6th.
Hmm.
It was absolutely beautiful. A couple of things. First of all, we got kind of a kick out of when they said, it's going to be bitterly cold tomorrow. And that meant 38 degrees, for one. For two, we were driving through Westport. And we came to an intersection where it was like a T road, And Jeannie with me says, look! And running down the middle of the other road, galloping as fast as it could go, I had no idea, was a sheep. Oh. I had no idea a sheep could run that fast.
Oh.
I mean, this was residential area. Behind the sheep was a dog chasing it. And we could watch it go down the hill and up, and the dog gave up in the middle of it and came back. It was the funniest thing I ever saw. the other thing that we went on, it wasn't a tour, it was a package from Irish Fest, and we could drive wherever we wanted to. And we ended up in Dublin. Never drove over, on the other side of the road like that before, but I managed to drive in Dublin fine. Saw some beautiful things. We ended up seeing Bunratty Castle, which was wonderful because we had ideas of what kind of things we wanted to bring by and bring back from there. And through the whole days that we were all over, we couldn't find what we were looking for. And then at Bunratty Castle, they have a shop. We found everything there we were looking for. It was absolutely fantastic.
How expensive was it, Terry? Because the dollar's not doing well.
This package from Irish Fest was fantastic because it was six nights, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the airfare both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Three different hotels, a big Irish breakfast at each one, a car with unlimited mileage, and it was $599 a piece.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was fantastic. We just couldn't pass it by.
Right. No, of course not. Right.
The other thing that was kind of interesting was their roads are so thin, so narrow. We thought, okay, they gave us a Ford Focus, kind of a little car, but it was sure a big one for over there, because there were some roads we were on where we had to pull off to the side and let the car go by, because the roads were so narrow.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like you had a great trip, just not long enough. What about expenses, James? The dollar, as you well know, isn't doing very well. Is it expensive for Americans to go to Ireland now?
I don't think so. I mean, certainly Ireland has become more expensive since it joined the euro, but I think in general you can have a cheap holiday in Ireland, and in fact for Americans it would be cheaper than most places you might want to go on holiday in America. And indeed, that package that that lady mentioned just sounded really like great value. You know, you've got the hire car and everything thrown in as part of that. So that just sounded like a really good deal to me. And I mean, with things like hire car, you just have to know how to play it. I mean, if you get a hire car from sort of Cork or Cork Airport or, Dublin or Dublin Airport, then, it's obviously going to be a lot cheaper than if you're sort of starting off in one of the places that I research where it's a bit more remote, so you sort of have a bit of a premium chucked on the top before you've even got going. So, yeah, it is pretty cheap. And, I mean, in terms of food and drink and activities, I think you can have probably a cheaper holiday than you would do, certainly in Britain where I'm from or in America.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Terry, so much for your call. Let's go to Joe from Racine. Hi, Joe.
Well, top of the morning to you.
Yeah, to you too, Joe.
I kissed the Blarney Stone, so you may believe what I say or not. we found bed and breakfasts when we were there, some years ago, but they always give you good information where to go next, and they all book the next bed and breakfast for you to send you on your way.
Hmm.
When we were in Dublin, it was the horse racing time.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to the information center, and everything was pretty well booked up. But then they said, well, we do have a space for you at Trinity College dorms.
Yeah.
So we went there, and it was like going back into the 18th century. It was such a lovely place to stay in the dorms. These old buildings, and they had all the amenities, even a laundry.
Hmm.
So I found, and if I go back to Ireland, my question is, it is so hard to drive on their roads, and being, that it's you have to drive on the wrong side of the road according to an American. And I always wonder, did you use their transportation system, their trains and whatnot?
How did you get around, James?
Oh, well, I was in a hire car. So I was having to navigate the very narrow roads as well. And sometimes those roads are so narrow that you get special passing places. So if you see a tractor or a sheep or whatever coming the other way, then you have to dive into one of these parking places. So yeah, the trains are a bit irregular. I mean, the buses are okay, sort of between, you know, major places like Cork and Dublin, but outside of that, they can be a bit erratic. So I would recommend getting a hire car if at all possible. And that means, of course, you can get off the beaten track a bit and go into some of these rural locations that buses or trains may not serve. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the other real danger in Ireland, if you're driving, is that, A, all of the signposts get turned around by leprechauns or possibly by bored school children causing mischief. So you can't trust the signposts. And the other is sometimes the directions people give can be very eccentric. Because I was walking in the hills above this town in Kerry, and I went up to this guy. I was a bit lost, and I said, "Oh, can you tell me the way to this place?" And he really thought about it for a while. He scratched his head, and then he said, "Well, if I were you, I wouldn't be starting from here."
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny. My dad always used to tell this story of being in Dublin, and he was trying to figure out directions to get out of town to go to Waterford or someplace. And this guy gave him elaborate, you know, native of Dublin gave him fairly elaborate instructions. And then at the end said, "Now, did you get that? Did you get that?" And my dad, who knows if he got it or not, said, "Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Thanks very much, sir. Thanks very much." And he said, "Well, before you go, would you mind repeating it?" be an Irish thing to say. Thanks, Joe, very much for your call. Let's go to Jim from West Salem. Hi.
Top of the morning to you.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
My wife and I spent a week in Ireland. 10 days a number of years ago. I highly recommend taking a tour. The bus is fantastic. Better than that, the tour directors are usually outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And you stay at really nice accommodations. The breakfast and evening meals are delightful. I also recommend that if you go to Dublin, and that's what we did, Monday through Friday, we toured Ireland. And spend the weekend. Spend a weekend in Dublin. If you don't, you're going to miss it. And one other thing is, along the trip, we stopped at Knock, K-N-O-C-K, Ireland.
Hmm.
I'd like to have James talk a little bit about Knock.
Where is Knock?
Go ahead, James.
Do you know, James?
I'm afraid Knock wasn't in my patch. I didn't cover that, so I'm not qualified to talk about that.
Where is it, Jim?
It's on the way to up toward Northern Ireland.
Oh.
It's like Fatima and Lourdes, and it's a shrine, and it's just delightful.
Hmm.
And I just recommend people taking – we went on this tour because it stopped there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of the tours do not stop there.
Mm-hmm.
But this one happened to be – and it wasn't a church tour at all. It was just – a tour that the company wanted to stop at Knock, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fantastic.
Yeah, great, Jim. Thanks so much for your call. We're celebrating St. Patrick's Day today because it's St. Patrick's Day, and our guest is James Bainbridge, a travel writer who's worked on Lonely Planet projects all over the world. The Lonely Planet project that we're talking about is Ireland, which has just been published and is available for those of you who are planning a journey to Ireland, or you've been to Ireland and you just want to relive it. That's what his latest project has been. The number here is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee callers, 227, the area code 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wow. Irish eyes are smiling. Sure, 'tis like a morn in spring in the lilt of Irish laughter. You can hear the angels sing when Irish hearts are happy. All the world seems bright and gay, and when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they steal your heart away.
James Bainbridge is our guest this St. Patrick's Day, a travel writer, and his latest work has just been published, part of the Lonely Planet series, and it is titled Ireland. Anne from Madison, our next caller, James. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, I love the Irish accent, the breathy ends of words, and it occurred to me, too, that the Irish R is a lot more like the American R than the English R or the Scottish R. You know, it's almost as if the American accent came more from Irish English than from English English. But I wanted to ask your guest about the series Valley to Angel, which was, I don't know whether it was broadcast in Milwaukee, but it was in Madison again and again. It was a BBC Ireland series, and it basically was about a little village in Ireland, I think, a real village there. It wasn't named Valley to Angel, but there was a... it was essentially about a priest who falls in love with a young bar owner, and it shows the priest, I don't know whether it was honest or not, because I haven't been, I've never traveled in Ireland. I've just been to the airport, but everybody, including the priest, would sit around at the bar most of the day, and the priest fell in love with the bar owner, and, there was a discussion, sort of a veiled one, but not really veiled, about priests who fall in love and, all the mix-up, and basically it dealt with that issue, but in a very strange way, and, of course, at the end, the bar owner electrocutes herself, and I thought maybe...
Oh, my gosh!
Yeah, the church, the church may have stepped in and said, we can't have the priest who's about to marry the bar owner actually do it.
What was the name of it, Anne?
It's scandalous. It's called Ballykissangel, Ballykissangel, and it was supposed to be the name of that town. And I thought it was such a charming series, and I couldn't imagine problems of the church being dealt with in such a, an open way in this country.
James.
Well, that's interesting to hear that, because obviously the church in Ireland still holds a lot of sway, and obviously the Catholic Protestant thing is still very influential, and obviously on a political level it's sort of being dealt with, and some progress is happily being made. But I mean, it's very interesting to hear you say that it seems to be sort of very liberal and open in its approach compared with America, because I'd say the church, the Catholic Church in particular, still has a real sort of stranglehold over smaller communities. I mean, people are really still very religious, and church plays a really strong part in life. And I mean, for instance, when I was in Kerry, I was in Killarney, which is in one of the main towns. And there was a funeral procession, and I saw this a few times actually. But everyone walked through, the main street of a fairly sizable town. I mean, it was the second biggest town in the whole of County Kerry, and all the traffic shut down and everything. And that's certainly not something you'd see in Britain. I don't know if you'd see it in America, but religion is still a very serious part of life. But I mean, one thing I would question there, and what Anne said, was maybe the church having an influence on the outcome of the plot of Ballykissangel. I mean, I don't know if it has that much of an influence on the media, but certainly in everyday life, you know, religion is still a very powerful force.
It is in many places in the world, isn't it? Many places. Thanks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess it's just interesting because I guess England, you know, where I live, like America, is a very secular society. And so it's interesting to see a Western country which is still, you know, so religious. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you see it a lot in Africa and India and sort of some of the third world places that I've traveled. But, you know, to see it in the West is quite striking.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anne, very much for your call. Camille from Evansville. Hi, Camille.
Hi there. We were in Ireland last June. We went for a wedding. We have a friend who he's from Ireland and wanted to get married where his family was. And that was just spectacular. We were in Kinsale most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really nice when you get to go somewhere and vacation, but you're with the people. So we did all the family stuff, and they knew all the places to go. And
oh, sure. That must have been a spectacular trip.
Oh, it was just wonderful. And, you know, they had all the historic sites planned out for us before we got there. But then we did get to do things, too, like just go bowling with everybody. And but Kinsale is just beautiful, and they've been working on making themselves the gourmet capital of Ireland, and the food there is fantastic.
Hmm. James.
Yeah, I'm wondering what sort of things Camille ate in Kinsale.
Oh, well, we had everything. We went to the Italian restaurant there, and that was just wonderful. We had fresh sea bass one night, which was spectacular. There was another restaurant there that had duck that they did, and it was just, I mean, we ate just about everything. It was just great.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Ireland, you know, has really kind of improved its restaurants and improved its culinary reputation. One thing I fancy going to is the Galway Oyster Festival. That's meant to be completely an amazing weekend, and by the end of it, you just can't face the sight. You can't face the sight of another oyster for the rest of your life. But it's really a good fun weekend, and there's this sort of oyster pub crawl you can do because all of the pubs actually serve the oysters. So in every pub you go into, you can have a pint of Guinness and a platter of oysters. So I think that would be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, that'd be good. I do have a question. I'm wondering if you would know, because no one actually in Ireland could answer this for me. On their road signs, you know how they have like a little bed or a gas station that says what the amenities are? Several of them have a duck on them.
A duck?
A duck, and nobody could tell us what the duck meant.
I'm not sure what that means. Yeah, sorry about that. Well, I mean, if the Irish can't tell you, then I'm not sure I can. And I
really?
Mean, it must be a big mystery because most people in Ireland, if they can imagine an answer, then they'll probably invent some sort of spiel to amuse you and give you some kind of answer.
Well, thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Camille. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Bye.
Let's go to Jill from Kimberly. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hi.
Top of the morning to you both.
Thanks, you too.
I was just calling because I lived in Ireland for 2 years near Blarney, and I had a couple driving tips to share with people that were thinking about heading over and hiring a car for their visit.
Okay.
I was going to recommend the full coverage insurance because then you don't have to worry about hitting the hedge with your side mirror. Which
of course
has happened to a number of people that came to visit us.
Uh-huh.
At the first gas station you stop at, pick up the big, fat road manual. It covers the entirety of Ireland and has all of the roads, the little ones and big ones and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also going to recommend that if you get a lot of cars behind you, find one of those spots and pull over. They can all get past you going faster, and they'll be happy, and you'll be happy because you won't have all of them sitting right behind you trying to make you go faster.
Right, right.
And as to the duck thing on the signs,
yeah,
I know just outside of Blarney there was a roundabout, and there was a duck sign right next to there. And that was a spot where a lot of ducks were, and you could feed them there.
Oh.
I mean, it just happened to be a place where it was kind of a marshy, watery area,
oh.
and everybody went there to feed the ducks.
So it's actually a duck
sort of
sign.
Thing.
It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. James?
Well, yeah, I mean, that could be the answer because there is a lot of opportunities for bird watching an island because they have a lot of migratory birds. So if you go at the right time of year, then you can do some really spectacular bird watching there. In fact, there's one of the places... One of the bird watching areas is right next to the location for that Tom Hanks film, which I'm struggling to remember the name of. The one, which is all about D-Day, and they filmed it. They filmed it down there, and you know when they're sort of, the big battle on the beach in World War II and everything.
Right. Right.
And that sort of Hollywood movie that was
Private Ryan. Is it Private Ryan? Is that the name of it?
Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan might be it.
Just to add to Jill's sort of more practical tips there, just about the car driving and so on, I thought an interesting thing was in terms of flying from America, obviously, you know, Dublin and Belfast and Cork are all always good bets, but there's an airport at Shannon Airport, which is on the west coast just outside Limerick, and that's really it's traditionally been a small airport, but that's sort of turning more and more into a international airport, and so you can actually get flights from places like New York to Shannon. So if you fly there, you're really right on the west coast among the mountains and not far from Kerry and Cork.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jill, for your call. Let's go to Linda from Oshkosh. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I'll do this real quick. About 10 years ago, I went to Ireland, and it was absolutely delightful, wonderful time. I was dating a gentleman at the time, and I thought that we were probably going to get married. So I decided to go ahead and get some Irish lace, and we started out... I actually flying into Shannon, and I did get some lace, and the gals at the shop were just awesome. They couldn't help you enough. They found me this wonderful collar from the 1940s that had this antique lace that were four-leaf clovers.
Oh, my.
So it was just great. Well, the following day, we went started to go around the Ring of Kerry, and it was around the time of Frank McCourt's book, Angela's Ashes, and we turned on the radio and we were listening to some excellent Gaelic music and flipped the channel, and here was Minnesota Public Radio, and they were sponsoring the world's worst Irish childhood, and they had a contest, and the winner was from Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, how amazing is this, to be on the other side of the world, and I'm from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and here's this great literature person, and the contest winner was from Oshkosh, and we just continued around the Ring of Kerry, and that day we saw a beautiful wedding, and then ended the day with a rainbow at the end of all of that, and it was just an absolutely delightful time. And by the way, I did end up getting married and used that as part of my train, the Irish lace. So it's an awesome place. Everyone should visit it at least once.
Oh, thank you for the story. There are always stories like that that come from Ireland, aren't there, James?
Yeah, oh, totally, yeah. I mean, it's such a romantic place. So I think it is the kind of thing that that really grabs people. I mean, yeah, there were some really interesting things in that story. I mean, I was interested in the mention of the antique lace, actually, because Ireland was really one of the places, sort of in the late 19th century, early 20th century, that really turned out internationally recognized lace that people from... you know, London and Paris would be sort of queuing up to buy. And also, it was also the center of antiquarian bookbinding. I think we're talking late 18th, early 19th century, or maybe, yeah, that's that sort of era. You know, there was maybe a 30-year window where Ireland led the world in terms of its antiquarian bookbinding. But the other, I actually had a nice story about... the sort of links between North America and Ireland, because one of the areas I was researching, County Wexford, is right in the south.
We only have
corner.
About 10 seconds left. Do we have time for it?
Okay, too long that yarn.
Sorry.
Probably.
All right, James, thank you so much for being with us and for,
thank you,
for doing the book. It's wonderful. James Bainbridge, travel writer, and the book is Ireland. He's written many others as well, but this one is just off the press, just in time for St. Patrick's Day. It's a travel guide to Ireland. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the program. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for help with music as well. And thanks for all of your wonderful phone calls, everybody. Have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day. News ahead and many more hours of great conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Crying conquer.